This League Podcast Network presents Prospect One, the Fantasy Prospect Podcast. Prospect One, with your host, Chris Welch.
This is the Prospect Podcast, Prospect One. I am your host, Chris Welch. Thank you guys for tuning in. The latest edition of Prospect One. You know, you can find me on Twitter at IsItTheWelch. And if you go to InThisLeague.com, that will take you to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/ITLArmy. That's where all the stuff lives. Now, let me tell you about what we got going on today, because I got a really good episode with a brand new guest to Prospect One. It's Jordan Rosenblum from Dynasty Guru. Jordan put together this really good article and some really good metric stuff that I think you guys would be interested about creating an expected home run to fly ball ratio that you can use with the minor leagues. Now, what this might help do is create underrated power. And there's some really fun names that pop up here. So Jordan is going to be joining me on the episode here very, very shortly. Great guy. And we are going to be talking about everything that is in the article, maybe more in depth, and pressing some buttons on some other prospects. So while we are without baseball right now, we can continue to still talk about it. You know, that is kind of the great thing. People are still churning out content. And everybody has taken different paths to it. Obviously, some of the bigger sites, you know, they've kind of done their work, at least as what they would do. And they've pivoted to different places, you know, like places like Pipeline or Baseball America. And you're seeing a lot of like, you know, the, you know, if you could redo the draft or the top, I think I just saw one. It was like the top five all time in the minor leagues at a position. And they're coming up with some good creative content, which is fantastic. I've seen other people doing some mock drafts for whatever could be the upcoming potential MLB draft, which we'll talk about. And there's others that are just getting back in and diving into the content, kind of, you know, reestablishing where they were, kind of coming back to players. You know, something we did in the breakouts episode that I find interesting is having the conversations where, you know, some people believe this guy or that guy is going to be a breakout and you might not feel the same, is going back and just kind of, I don't know, seeing where you were at. Seeing what did I maybe get wrong about that situation or what can I adjust? Even into this episode, there's some interesting stuff that Jordan and I talk about that I was able to kind of go back and take a look on. So, you know, the work is really never done. And even though, you know, games are not being played and less than ever, you know, there could always be the argument where it's like, well, there's really not that much baseball. Maybe there's some, you know, practice games going on. It's weird to move ranks around. There's literally nothing going on. But I think it's always a good task to go back and just kind of reestablish where you were, you know, look at some new stats, you know, watch some new video. And that's kind of what I've been doing. And hopefully everybody in some other degree has been doing the same. So I am still working on the prospect list, as always, working on potentially some of the added additions that I hope to have in April. So if you guys want, patreon.com/ITLArmy, that is a place where you can find my top 500 list. As you know, all of the other stuff with it, the draft list is going to be really, really interesting. I'll talk about that here in a second of, you know, what is going to come of that. But I've got a, you know, 2020 draft list as far as the fantasy prospects go. All the other stuff is in there. I mean, by team, by position, I think on here Friday, I'm going to do a chat over on Patreon. So we're doing chats and we're pumping out a bunch of extra content. So if you want to make sure that you're still locked into everything and you want to support your boys, independent podcasters that we are, come and check us out, patreon.com/ITLArmy, because none of the stuff has stopped. You know, we've transferred into some different areas and prioritizing over it in this league, some, you know, some other stuff we wanted to create, some fun stuff, but prospects are heavy in my mind right now. You know, when I see people playing MLB The Show, playing with prospects, I'm like, oh, come on. To me, even just like diving in and watching like break videos of people opening up, you know, cards and prospects are popping up and I'm like, oh man. So I'm flowing with some envy, but hoping to continue putting out some of that fun stuff. I had a lot of people actually mention to me, because I know there's a pretty hardcore card trading community, and I like cards, and I don't do anything, you know, crazy, but a lot of people wanted me to talk a lot more about it, which I think I'm open to. I would definitely be open to it. Maybe some experts, you know, I've probably put a tweet out there to Phil Hughes, see if he wants to talk or something like that. You know, another thing I was thinking about too is maybe even putting an open tweet out to people tagging some prospects that they'd like to, maybe that would maybe want to talk right now. I'm thinking about reaching out to a couple as well. All of that aside, we're putting up lots of different content, whether do small pivots. We've got some card people in our Patreon who have been actually doing some break videos and doing some breaks, whether we're looking at video, whether I'm reestablishing some stuff on the prospect list, all of that is on the table. And what's like a really, really weird time, you know, baseball decided to kind of come out with a, it wasn't like, you know, hey, baseball's coming back or anything like that. But it was just, you know, Rob Manfred kind of showing, you know, his cards of saying, like, we are hopeful that we're not only going to come back soon, but, and this was the telling thing, he goes, that we will be an inspirational force for people. So by that standard, you know, they're obviously taking this, they're taking it seriously, but when they get back, they're going to see themselves kind of be on the forefront, which, you know, take it for what it is, of when they could come back. I think June is being thrown around right now. Maybe mid-May would be when teams reestablish. Maybe some type of a short spring training. Craig Mish reported that MLB has been talking about this as well. We also got reports that a full season isn't in play, but we would be looking at maybe around 140 to 150 games with double headers. I don't exactly know all of what this would mean for the minor leagues. I mean, would everybody almost just start at the half season point? You know, the minor leagues have a weird thing where you've got the full season, which has like the stoppage in the middle, and then you have, you know, the half season ball that starts up a little bit later. You have the AZL that starts up in July. I don't know what all these guys would do, if they would report for a couple months, or, you know, if they would just skip the break in between full season and half season would start as normal. But at least they're talking about it. At least there's some conversation about how, you know, how the baseball season will return, which could make some prospects that are closer to the majors actually get an opportunity to play sooner rather than later, especially if there's any type of roster exemption, because there's going to be double headers. They might be willing to expand the rosters this round. So that could mean bigger things for Spencer Howard, Alec Baum, Dylan Carlson, players like that, where I think other prospects, I think, you know, with the missed time, I don't think you see a lot of movement across multiple levels. I don't think really anything to that degree. One of the bigger things that came out of all of this, though, and it's been, Craig, I think, first tweeted about it, then I saw a few other people tweeting about it on Thursday. The bigger thing is that the MLB draft looks like it would be moved until July, and it might only be 10 rounds. I have not seen clarification if all of the players not drafted would become free agents, if there would be some type of a pool of, you know, post round 10 signing type of money. I don't exactly know. I really don't know what their plan is for it, but it does look like, as long as nothing else gets crazy, the draft would be sometime in July, and that it would only be 10 rounds, which is a pretty big impact. It has potential impact across the board. You know, baseball and the world gets right. What would they do about those potential cuts they were talking about with those 40 plus minor league teams? If there's less players in a draft, I think it almost sets themselves up for that, which would be a really bad precedent. You know, baseball needs to be doing everything they can to kind of keep in the positive ire of all baseball fans. And doing this now seems like a logical decision, but it could have further implications to make it easier. You know, less players that are brought in. Especially if MLB has less of a available player pool for them to sign these guys, you know, post round 10, you might end up just seeing high school guys just say, screw it, you know, I'm not going to even mess around with this. And they're going to jump into college ranks, which could, I don't know, could make it kind of weird here for the next couple of years. And then you might see a decent amount of seniors or juniors that decide to go back. Seniors are going to be given the eligibility by the NCAA to go back. And Bogman and I did on the Sports Grid, we have a radio show. I talked about, and I couldn't tell you if I talked about it here, it's been a crazy month, but with, you know, those type of exemptions being put out there, like, I personally wouldn't be shocked if a guy like Spencer Torkelson went back. I'm not saying he's going to do it. I think he's the first overall pick in the draft, so I don't really see why he would do it. But, you know, this was an ASU team that had the potential to win a College World Series, and all of those guys could go back. Spencer is the tough case here, because at this point, you really can only hurt yourself, I suppose. I mean, if he's not one, he's at worst top three in this draft, if Emerson Hancock and Austin Martin went to go. But, I mean, those are the type of implications that could start popping up here. So the draft is going to be a really, really weird one. And we're going to have baseball give us full clarity before we can start getting into crazy speculation. But 10 rounds, little bit less of a season. I think higher leveled minor leaguers have the potential to pop up. And I think the movement throughout the minors is going to be really, really minimal this year, with probably, I would guess, most players staying at their levels because of, you know, what we're dealing with here. I guess the only, like, you know, positive sign is that just we're talking about any of it right now. We're all, you know, majority of us are hopefully in a semi-good state, but we're stuck at home. I know some people are out there just absolutely working their butts off, and they're dealing with that. And baseball's not even at the top of their mind. But, you know, for any of us that are still kind of in this space and we're watching minor leaguers, you know, we're watching them put out videos of them trying to work out, or, you know, the fear comes in when you see like what the Padres did last week, where they sent off two of their pitchers, Andres Munoz and Reggie Lawson, to have Tommy John surgery. So now we've got this collective group. Think about the Tommy John pitchers we've had before the season even started up. I mean, Eric Pardino, Joey Wentz, Reggie Lawson, Andres Munoz, and I'm completely forgetting. I know there's Tyler Beede had one, whether you can, you know, what level of prospect you consider him. And it's probably not done. You know, the amount of guys that they're just saying, screw it, let's get this done. Let's get them good for next season. That creates some kind of fear. And it's just good that at least baseball is kind of back in the conversation with all the chaos that's gone on. So you might get, I have no idea what the spring trainings are going to look like, what type of version they're going to pop back out. And out here locally in Arizona, you know, I will be reporting to you. So I'll be at least one of the people. There'll be many really smart people, and then me, that will be able to kind of like report back once the camps open back up and the fields, and, you know, also like once the season gets going. So how are teams going to treat extended spring training? Because people forget there is, as soon as the minor league spring training version ends, which usually, you know, in the normal world would end about the beginning of April, then, you know, all of the guys would start reporting to their affiliates, and then the teams hold what's called extended spring training, and those are still at the facilities. And every day it's usually, you know, the guys that are going to play in a low season. You know, sometimes it'll be mid, like the just the A ball, like the half season ball, or rookie level. Those guys, and some even Dominican Summer League, all of those guys will kind of stay back and work out. We could see an influx of those players staying with teams at this point. So I'll be able to at least report back to what some teams are doing once some of the facilities open back up. But that's probably a little bit ahead of us, right? All right, so just to let you guys know, patreon.com/ITL Army. I'm going to keep doing some chats. I'm open if anybody, I don't get the request, so I don't bother with it. I'm open to doing some chats, open to everybody if people wanted that. At least one. I don't want to make it all about Patreon. Obviously, you know, Bogman and I want to keep afloat with everything that we're doing, but we're open to making content for everybody. That's why I've kept Prospect One going every single week, so you guys are continuously able to consume the stuff that you still like, and we can still have conversations. Open to doing a listener mailbag episode. I imagine there's a lot of stuff that's out there, and open to whatever you guys might have. You got some suggestions, hit them my way. I'll be pumping those out the next few weeks, months, whatever it's going to be. All right. You guys are going to enjoy this episode. Jordan Rosenblum, really smart guy, great guy, and I had a very fun conversation. Wasn't sure how long we were going to go, but we spent just about an hour talking about this really great article and some of the work he's doing. So, Dynasty Gurus, Jordan Rosenblum, let's go do it.
Say, I like you. I like you so much, I'm going to make you my partner. All you have to do is find the gold, and I'll share it with you, 50-50.
Prospect One.
Joining me now on Prospect One is a brand new guest to the show, and it's got some really, really great content. I'm excited to have a conversation about. You can find him over at Dynasty Guru, and you can find him on Twitter at Rosen Jordan Bloom. It's Jordan Rosenblum. Jordan, what's up, buddy?
How's it going? I'm doing well.
We're doing solid. Now, you are a very intriguing person, not just because, A, you are really smart. You're one of the smart guys. I was reading your article that we're going to talk about, and there's a lot of, it's got a lot of the stuff of the mind-bending formulas. You know, you do a good job about breaking out formulas, but also, you are in Finland. You're not even here right now, so I'm dying to know what got you over to Finland.
Yeah, so I think I'm one of the few baseball writers based in Finland. Although they do play Pesäpallo here, that's Finnish baseball, and it's like a mix of like cricket and baseball. But that's a conversation for another day.
How does that work? And here's a bigger question: are they playing it right now, and can you go stream it so we have something to do?
No, I think overall the structure or the corona impacts here are pretty similar to what I've heard from the States. So there's unfortunately no Pesäpallo right now, but it's basically like soft toss. They just throw it really high up in the air, and then they hit it kind of like cricket. But the one interesting twist is that home runs are outs. So it's like this Finnish equality. I take it as like a metaphor for like Finnish equality, which is like Finland's a more equal society in terms of like income distribution compared to most countries. So it's like maybe that's like a metaphor. Like in the US, you know, home runs are a sign of individuality. But in Finland, home runs are out.
It sounds very much, it's like the one percenters. It's like, no, you're out. It actually, it sounds very softballish as you were saying that. It's like using a baseball, but softball, you know, it's soft toss up. And there are a lot of leagues where if you hit a home run, it's actually an out. Or sometimes in softball, if you ever played competitive softball, like after five homers over the wall, any are an out. So it actually has some of those qualities to it. But the digression,
yeah.
What got you is, especially because you're over with the Dynasty Guru, which I know a lot of the listeners here are very familiar with, and you're still continuously writing about baseball, yet you have shipped off over to Finland. So what, what caused that? Or, you know, what's her name?
Yeah, so I think the Dynasty Guru has a really strong recruiting pipeline in Finland, or at least they at least have me. So that makes one. But yeah, so I think you kind of understood the situation, right? I live with my girlfriend here who's from here. And also I met her studying in Denmark. So she was doing an exchange in Denmark and I was studying social policy there. And then I slowly made my way over to the next Nordic country, to Finland. And I think I'll stay here. I think we'll stay here for the duration. So,
oh, wow. I mean, you're originally from, I think you said you're originally from Jersey though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So a bit different, a bit to the west.
Yeah.
Here.
You've definitely done this stuff though. You know, you and I were talking before we recorded. I'm not a big soapbox guy like a lot of people can be. And, you know, by the way, it's usually not the people in my industry. It's usually, you know, listeners that will be like this. But I'm not a big person that sits there and is like, you know, oh, man, you know, you got to be on the field. And, you know, when you see these guys in person, that's the only way to evaluate, because it's not true. There are so many ways to evaluate, you know, the tools that someone uses or their abilities that can maybe come into more question. But you absolutely can look at these guys via video. You can go on YouTube and you can learn a lot. You can watch games. You can learn a lot. You can look at the stats. You can learn a lot. And going in person, you can learn a lot. If you're able to do all of them, sometimes it can maybe paint a good picture. But, you know, how have you worked through the process, especially if you're, you know, talking? I mean, we're going to talk about what you've done here, but, you know, you're talking about prospects. How does your process work? Not that it's necessarily any different. You could be in Nebraska or Finland, and probably the process is still the same. But how have you battled overcoming being able to like properly evaluate prospects when, especially in your case, you're not even in the U.S.?
Yeah, so I think there's a ton of good writers and scouts and prospect analysts. There's so much information out there now, and they're really good at just generally, and I think you yourself included, like watching video, watching people live. And understanding like how different body types age and progress and how different tools age and progress. But none of that is my, I would say none of that is my like competitive advantage, I guess. But I do think the world of prospecting, like in terms of like quantitatively, is not really as well understood as like major league statistics, which are, much more mainstream now. Like we have big projection systems that do pretty good job of forecasting players in the majors. But then when you go to the minors, you find a lot of the projections are one, very pessimistic, and two, they're all very close to league average. So like minor league statistics, I feel like they're kind of like, this is something I've talked to with Jonathan Judge over at Baseball Prospectus, the guy who does Pecota there for them now, how prospect projections are kind of like the final frontier for sabermetrics in a way. And there's a lot of like easy low hanging fruit to be had there. So that's something I've tried to focus on while outsourcing my scouting to analysts like you and James Anderson, for example, is another guy I really trust with that sort of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I do feel like there's always an infight about being able to to project. I mean, we've even seen that. Two friends of mine, Ralph Lipschitz and Derek Carty, got into it at the beginning of 2019 with the. And this is a little bit. And I had Carty on our In This League Fantasy Baseball podcast to talk about it. And I've had Ralph on as well many times, actually, just recently on. I think we spoke about it. But obviously, it was a tad bit different in that respect because you had this situation where, you know, us as prospect people, we had seen Fernando Tatis. And I'm actually I'm super close to it. So I was obviously on that side of, you know, seeing him since 2017 in the minors. And then you had, you know, quantitative projection systems going, well, first off, rookies don't usually find this type of success. Some of his underliners don't really match up, so that you had this battle, and it then turned into, as you obviously, as you were kind of responded, you had this battle of people being like, well, you know, projection people who don't understand prospects don't know how to project them at the major league level, and prospect people kind of defending that. Obviously curious your take on that, but I felt like what you were also talking about is the last big hope in this type of world is finding out how you project these guys at a minor league level. Like I'm saying, not going to the major league level, but how you project them stage to stage, because you don't have this necessarily with major leaguers, where they're moving to different environments every single year and different levels of maturation. Because and I find it like, how do you actually properly walk in and project when you have guys that are going to be shortened? They're going to be working on stuff. The actual jump from competition to where a guy is attacking you with what type of pitch changes and ballpark differences, they are all so dramatic at the minor league level that finding a proper way to project this type of stuff to me is absolutely fascinating. And obviously it kind of is to you too.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I remember that the Tatis argument with Cardi and Ralph. And I really like both of those guys, and I respect both of them. And the bat is I really like the bat, especially for major leaguers. Like I use it a lot for major leaguers. But for rookies, I do think it's pretty negative, and the guys are often like pretty closely grouped together. And Cardi is even, I mean, to his credit, usually the bat, after one season of data, it catches up. Like right now, in terms of Tatis, I think it might be higher on Tatis than any other projection system. And the same with Acuna, it caught up really fast on him. But it does take a little bit of major league data. So as fantasy owners, we don't want to wait for a year of major league data. And part of my goal is to like, so there's a really big gap between how fantasy owners value prospects and how projection systems project them. And there's like two explanations for that. One is that we're just all overvaluing them, which I don't think is the right one. I think the real challenge is building a system that is sort of compatible with how highly owned or highly valued prospects are in fantasy leagues and to major league teams, because clearly they're precious like gems for their major league teams and for their fantasy owners. So I think it's kind of on the analyst to build a system that can sort of defend that sort of high valuation of
them.
Well,
and obviously I think what we're going to talk about today, the big crux of everything was you would put an article up on the Dynasty Guru, which I would suggest people go check out. It's called The Underrated Minor League Power Performers or Performances. You could almost say performers if you'd like to think of it like that. And do you think it's fair to say, because I obviously want you to break this down, but is it fair to say that in the second part of what I had just said, where you've got obviously the gap between a minor leaguer transitioning into the majors and people trying to project, but finding a way to really properly project on a minor leaguer in the minors when they're jumping from low A to high A to double A, it's this whole other world that this, what you've created, which is kind of a expected home run to fly ball rate here, is this kind of in the realm of you trying to A, project the minor leaguers through their minor league stops, or tell the bigger story that's behind the numbers, which is always something that we need to focus on, especially when you're in player evaluation, you need to be able to look beyond the numbers. And is this kind of your work towards that?
Yeah. So I think one of the easy, like one of the low hanging fruit things in terms of looking at minor league statistics is just converting everything to the same baseline. So there's like 15 different leagues or 13 different leagues or something.
For now,
if you can convert, for now, hopefully for the foreseeable future as
well.
Yeah,
exactly.
But if you can just convert them all to the same baseline, it already makes it much easier. So for example, if you go to Fangraphs now, you can look at all affiliated minor leagues and just sort by WRC. But that the reader has to do a lot of work there to convert, like, okay, an NYP performance means a lot less. A 150 WRC in the New York Penn League means a lot less for future success than a 150 WRC plus in a AAA. So one thing I do, and most of the projection systems do this, is just convert all the stats to the same baseline. And you do that by looking at how statistics change after promotion. So for example, when a guy moves from AA to AAA, perhaps he maintains 90% of his performance, just kind of making up numbers. But if you can follow that process to its conclusion and convert everybody to the same sort of baseline, and it makes it a lot easier just to kind of treat minor league statistics like major league statistics and just kind of remove all the noise and just focus on the important stuff. And the other thing you have to do besides converting everyone to the same league difficulty level or the same league baseline is account for aging. So just making sure like you're like someone doing something at 17 years old in like Marco Luciano at 17 in the AZL, tearing it up is much more impressive than like Alexander Canario in the same league at 19. So just incorporating those aging curves also. If you take those two pieces, the aging curves and the league difficulty baseline, and you convert them all to the same baseline, it becomes much easier to just compare apples to apples. And there are assumptions that go into that, but they're I think somewhat reasonable.
Do you ever assume in everything that you were just talking about, do you incorporate any of the grading scales on the players? Because that is something that can follow, and something it's a little obtuse, like when you, if you get into it and people are just like, well, he's a 60 power, but it is something to be said that, you know, a minor leaguer can work through 3 years of stuff, and then, you know, maybe at AA it finally clicks in, or you can, you know, on the inverse, you can see a guy who's hit for high average, low strikeouts for 3 years, and they get to AA and they start to make the transfer for hitting four power, so you can see the strikeouts come up and you'll see the power numbers start to come up. Is there any type of an account in any of those projections about scouting grades?
There definitely is room for that, and that would definitely improve them. I tend to focus on just the low-hanging fruit, just in terms of general aging curves, like the average 19-year-old improves 30% in WOBA from 19 to peak. So that's just like a general aging curve that applies to everyone. But yeah, for sure, like it would be helpful to like break it down by body type, break it down by future power grades and everything. And the other thing is like, well, for example, I looked at the Fangraphs exit velocity data, which has been released for minor leaguers for the first time this offseason, this extended offseason. And I looked at which grades that correlates with the most to try to see like, because different prospectors do tend to define grades somewhat differently. I mean, there are broad similarities,
yeah,
but it's hard to know exactly. It would be good if it was like extremely standardized, because you have to be careful. You have to like take that into account when you're considering it. And I found the Fangraphs raw power grades are the most correlated with exit velocity by far. So it would be reasonable. You could use Fangraphs raw power grades as a proxy for exit velocity to generate these minor league power metrics that we're going to talk about. That would be something that you definitely can do, and that I would encourage people to do themselves. And I built a calculator too, so people can plug in their own power grade and kind of see for themselves what the numbers would look like if you assumed a higher level of power or a lower level of power for any given minor leaguer.
Jordan, man of the people. Jeez. All right. Well, you're gonna have to dig me into that. I want to play around that calculator. But let's talk about what did get you here. So like I said, it's Jordan's Research Ramblings, Underrated Minor League Power Performances. This article was posted on March 18th over on the Dynasty Guru, and I'll try to put a link to it. And, you know, the simplification of kind of what you say in the article, and I want your words and obviously to explain all of what it is and how you got to it. And then we'll talk about some of the players that really caught my eye. But you had said that you kind of had almost generated this Mike Podhorzer type of expected home run fly ball rate that helps you identify, as the article says, underrated power performances that people might not be prepared about. So explain to me what this is and how you got to it.
Yeah, so I've been reading Fangraphs probably like most listeners for like a decade or something. And Mike Podhorzer has been doing these expected home run per fly ball equations for, I don't know, as long as I can remember. And they tend to, they've kind of evolved as information has gotten better over the years, but they tend to capture First, it was fly ball distance. Now it's fly ball distance and exit velocity. And basically, for a given amount of fly balls, power hitters can be expected to hit more home runs, and vice versa. And one way to measure power is with exit velocity and fly ball distance. And that tends to explain a lot of the variance in home run per fly ball in the same season. So if you look at a given set of power metrics, so average fly ball distance and exit velocity, and then you look at actual performance, like how many home runs a guy has hit, they're very correlated. But there are some outliers where there are guys like Joe Adell who hit zero home runs in 120 plate appearances in AAA, even though he had really good power metrics. So his average fly ball distance was 311 feet. His exit velocity was 92. So it's really odd that he had zero home runs, zero home run per fly ball percentage in AAA, even though he had those power metrics. And it's probably, I think the assumption of this model is that it would be fair to assume that you should grant credit to Joe Adell for as many home runs as someone with his underlying power metrics would typically have. So someone with 92 mile per hour exit velocity and above average fly ball distance typically would have around a 20% home run per fly ball rate. And then you could take his fly balls and adjust them for upwards for however many home runs he actually deserved, quote unquote deserved.
And what's really interesting, if you go through, Jordan breaks us all down. Like I said, this, it's kind of pieced in from using the fly ball and the hard hit rate, exit velocity rates, so fly ball distance, exit velocity, you're going to get those. And he's got the actual formula kind of built in here. And then you pick some players to talk about. And what I find interesting about this is it does, I think, two things. And maybe, I could be creating some of this. Obviously, one is the blatantly obvious, where like the Joe Adell one, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a few, this is a player that he has incredibly positive, pure raw power. I cite this all the time because I saw him when he came out here in his pro debut. But even just as most recent as the AFL, Emily Walden and I were standing there and we're watching BP, and Emily just like looks over at me and she goes, "What?" As Joe is just absolutely just murdering baseballs out of the field. And he's got huge, huge raw power. So this thing is obviously going to tell you some of those. I mean, literally can be a formula to just us going, wow, and understanding and knowing these big raw power guys that sometimes aren't tapping into it. But also what I see from this, and maybe the first guy is a prime example let's talk about here, is this tells you these positive, like when we talk about minor leaguers and we're talking about a very common statement that people will make is that power is the last thing to develop. It's a common, thing that we'll all use for high quality hitters. And I kind of referenced it earlier where I say, a guy might be high contact for multiple years and then they're going to start to make that turn. What I've noticed with this, with some of the names that are on this list, is there are some guys that might not actually be so much, quote, like these underrated big power performers, but there might be guys that make really good contact, that the contact is of the level that future power is in the workings. And the first guy is the guy that actually sparked me in this to really, really want to have this conversation with you, was Geraldo Perdomo. Is somebody that popped up on this list for you. You had a 6% mm-hmm. expected home run to fly ball ratio versus his 2% home run to fly ball ratio, 274 average fly ball distance. And this is a guy that I have seen so much of. And I remember on, if people want to go back and listen, when Christian Robinson joined me from the Diamondbacks a year or two ago, we were talking, he singled out Perdomo. Since then, I've had so many people single out Perdomo of, him being, as they would say, quote, the dude. He was the guy in the AFL he was the youngest there and people were so impressed about. All he does is make really, really good contact. And he sometimes falls into patterns of that side slap. He's implemented kind of the windmill swing that we're seeing more popular. Vidal Brujan, actually, we'll talk about in a second. Wander Franco, he's implemented some of that. But when he gets under the ball, he can go. And Eric Longenhagen and I, just a couple weeks ago, we talked about, and I had brought up the point, are we at an impasse with Perdomo of which side is he going to go? Is he going to go into this? Is he going to take the next step? Because he might be leveling off as far as like where his really good talent took advantage of the lower levels. Is he leveling off to take the next step, which this next step might be implementing that contact to make bigger power numbers? Or are we going to see the level off, which we've seen in so many prospects, Colton Welker, maybe even Key Brian Hayes, guys like that who have kind of just, you know, they haven't moved into the next step. So that's a big, long diatribe for me to say that I find it interesting that this not only identifies to me the power hitters that aren't hitting for power, but it's also identifying the guys that might not be traditional power hitters with really, really great contact that might tap into it. So talk to me about Perdomo, who came under your Class A 6% expected home run to fly ball ratio boost.
Yeah, so even without accounting for the extra power for Perdomo, I think he's pretty exciting, and he's a guy that rates pretty well. Like his performance, when you account for his age and the leagues that he was in, he's a guy that's always been really young for a level, one of the youngest players in high A last year. And his combination of plate discipline, like his walks and strikeouts, his command of the strike zone, his contact ability is all elite, and it's from a premium defensive position. So really the only thing left there is the power. But he's only 19, and power does tend to grow a ton with age. So from 19 to peak, he should see really substantial growth. And that's without even granting him his home run for fly ball rate, which was his expected home run per fly ball rate, which is three times as much as his actual home run per fly ball rate. So he already has a decent amount of pop. That 6% expected home run per fly ball rate is around league average for Class A, which is no joke when you consider he was really young for level. And he like, just if he follows normal aging patterns, he should see really substantial growth. Whereas those other things like strikeout rate doesn't tend to improve nearly as it doesn't improve nearly as much with age. And he already has an elite skill there. So I definitely think he's underrated, even though he's cracking some top 100s already. And his upside is exciting.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys, too. I mean, you know, the contact is great. And he had 21 doubles last year. He went through those two levels. He only played 26 games in Visalia. Otherwise, he was in Kane County for the 90. He had three homers, three triples, 21 doubles, a 70 to 67 walk to strikeout ratio. So like you were talking about his plate discipline, he walked more than he struck out. And then he also then took the boost over to the Arizona Fall League, where the guy literally every single day was just getting a hit. And even his own teammate, Seth Beer, talked about him to other prospects. We're talking about Perdomo. So, you know, where can, if you, I mean, you have to pretend here, Jordan, for a minute. If there were a full minor league season, in your mind, going through and seeing him pop up on this, what would have been, what would you think would have been a reasonable look at his power? I mean, almost anything, 6 would have been a double of what he's put up. 8 would have been a career double high from 2018, where he hit 4. What do you think this move from, let's assume he would have started back in Advance A and then maybe moved up another level, like what do you think this would have translated to? Maybe like he jumps up to a 9 to 10 power type of guy. Maybe his doubles kick up a little bit. Just, you know, just playing around here.
Yeah, I guess just going off gut feel, I definitely think he's a guy who should be able to hit like 15 homers in his peak, perhaps even more than that. So there are guys like, if you look at an extreme example, like Ketel Marte, when he first started out in the majors, he hit like one home run and 400 plate appearances, but power really does tend to grow with age. So I would not count out substantial growth from Perdomo. And yeah, I think even this year, if we get some baseball, he can definitely eclipse 10 homers, for example, in a full season. He kind of reminds me a little bit of, in terms of the rarity of his like plate discipline and contact skills and developing power, it kind of reminds me of Isaac Paredes a little bit, who's another guy I'm a big fan of.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, we would definitely hope that he doesn't go, you know, physicality, his physical weight, the way of Paredes. Like, I mean, not even like jokes aside, like Paredes out here, he's just a little bit of a big boy. And, you know, coming back, I do see the comp. What's interesting about Perdomo, and I think a lot of, like, when I was talking with Longenhagen and where, you know, he almost was kind of stumped when I brought up the idea. I was like, is Perdomo ready to take a next jump, or is he leveled out? And he's like, it's a good question, because that is the question. Because I think one thing we look at with Perdomo if you've seen him in person or you've evaluated, is like, where is the body going to move to? Like, what, you know, he's kind of a tall, skinny-ish guy, and he's not crazy skinny, but like, he doesn't have obvious projectability as far as what his body is going to end up looking like. So, you know, he's just going to have to continue to, you know, make little incremental changes, obviously, to muscle, and the swing is going to have to continue to, you know, I mean, the high end plate discipline is going to have to turn to him turning on all of the right baseballs for the power to come up, which actually takes to the other guy who's in your high A advance look. It was actually Perdomo's teammate in the AFL for Salt, the Salt River Rafters, and they were second base and shortstop together many games that I saw. And it's Vidal Brujan, and he actually, the numbers look pretty eerily similar. Am I wrong here, Jordan, that they look pretty eerily similar as far as the same, I think, percentage of expected home run fly ball rate, fly ball distances on average look pretty close. I mean, talk to me about Brujan.
Yeah, so I think, I think you're totally on the money there. And just another point, just on the Paredes comparison, I just meant like in terms of the good parts of Paredes. So like the offensive skills, not so much the defensive skills and the speed, which Perdomo definitely has a huge edge there.
Yeah, 26 stolen bases in 118 or so games last year. So, I mean, if you got 15 and 30 out of Perdomo, what you might have is a shortstop version. You might have a Starling Marte at shortstop type of a guy and at peak.
Yeah, well, I love it. And if you wanted to get to 26 stolen bases for Isaac Paredes, you'd probably have to go back to his Little League days. you have to include those numbers. But yeah, I think Brujan does compare well to Perdomo in terms of his power in 2019. But I think that there's a key difference there, which is Perdomo's got like 2 or 3 years on Perdomo. And I think that kind of highlights the upside Perdomo has, because it is really rare to have those sorts of performances at that young of an age. And he was 19 during the season last year. So I do think I'm more optimistic on Perdomo's future power growth relative to Brujan's, because of the 2 year age advantage he's got on him.
I 100% agree. And, you know, I battle with those. You know, Brujan is very popular. Obviously, our buddies over at Prospects Live, they love Brujan, and he's been kind of one of their guys for a long time. I've always had major questions about where the power is really going to go. He is impressive in person, but the questions, I don't really think, alleviate that. From a fantasy perspective, Perdomo has a really, really positive and maybe easy chance at being more of a fantasy asset than Brujan. And the guy may end up moving positions. You know, he's talked about, you know, he might be second to short or even center field. That could end up being a move. So I like how you use that to say that, you know, Brujan is where he is, but it might be more of a spotlight on a guy like Perdomo and what he could be.
Yeah. I think like I could imagine Brujan hitting like maybe getting to 10 home runs in his peak. But Perdomo, it's much easier to dream on him and see like 15 to 20 even in his peak years. So I'm pretty excited to see how he develops.
Now, your double A guys, I want to talk about all of them that you highlighted in this article, because I really think they're great. We'll do just quick one by ones. Number one, Royce Lewis, who, you know, this was one I didn't want to come off of until I saw in person in the AFL, even though he came off of an atrocious year. And, you know, from the minute I got to obviously talk with him, but also see him play, you can really, really see the talent that's in there. And, you know, he talked about how the injury just really marred his entire 2019. He ended up winning the AFL MVP, and he was having a good spring. He pops up at an expected home run to fly ball of 9% with a 290 average fly ball distance on here. So quick thoughts on Royce Lewis and what you think, you know, as this popped up, that's a pretty substantial number at 9% expected home run to fly ball, as we've been talking around 6 for Perdomo and Brujan.
Yeah. So Lewis has kind of been haunting me all off season, and I think part of that reason is because, so I do like a stats only prospect rankings by projection, and Lewis didn't rank that well by that, just because it's,
well, how could it's mostly he from weighted, last year?
Right. It's mostly weighted towards 2019 performance. But if my rankings are so far off with like the general sort of scouting community opinion, then there's more likely than not that I'm doing something wrong. So that was part of the motivation for doing this article, to better capture Lewis's future potential. And same with Joe Adell, who I guess we'll get into more later. So I was really excited to see his numbers looking considerably better once you capture, give him more credit for his underlying power. And I think even if you weight his 2018 and 2017 similarly to how you weight 2019, which is what I think most scouting analysts have been doing, basically just kind of giving him a second chance and not taking his numbers at face value this year. In this case, it seems pretty reasonable. I don't think he should be. I don't think he's quite in terms of a fantasy list. I don't think his offensive ability is quite elite enough to have him like top 10. But I do think he should. He's a very good bet, I think, to bounce back next year. And those underlying power metrics kind of correlate well with their how you would expect them to be when you watch him play.
Yeah, when
you read about him.
And obviously I'm a little bit different on Lewis there, because one of the things I'm going to assume is if he's hitting for enough contact, you know, that big old leg kick works as a timing mechanism that he's really refined. If he is hitting for contact, the power speed numbers he puts up, they're of the 20-30 variety. So, I mean, if he's hitting at a high-end contact, then I'd have to assume he is an elite option. The question is, and it can be debated, is will that happen? 2019 was a good show of how it can't happen. But since the AFL on, you know, he's been tapping into this. So that, I mean, that's where, you know, rubber meets the road kind of on the analysis of Royce Lewis based on a horrible season he had. But you see these really impressive underlying numbers that can show this guy is an easy 20 plus power potential guy. He can steal bases at a high clip. And also, just to throw in an added addition, in the AFL, he played like four different positions. So versatility and eligibility might be kind of across the board. Any comments on that? You're welcome to retort. But I'm also curious, what is the average exit velocity? Because he had an average exit velocity of about 90. What is the number? Is it 90 above that starts to like grab your eye when you see a 90 or above? You're like, ooh, hello. Or is it maybe 88? Like, what's an average exit velocity that gets you kind of excited when you see it?
Leaguers. Yeah, I would say so. 89 in AA is a league average. And yeah, definitely 90 or above is really impressive. And then also accounting for the age they are. So Lewis is pretty young for AA. So that definitely kind of just looking at his raw stats all year, I'm like, why is this guy rating so highly? And then I see, all right, of course he's got like this amazing raw power, and then it shows up in the exit velocity, and I start to understand. And yeah, I mean, your position on Lewis, I think is totally fair, and he clearly has the tools where if everything clicks, he definitely can be he can justify the high rankings that he's got this offseason.
Yeah,
I guess. Yeah. I guess that's all I have on Lewis.
No, that's good. O'Neill Cruz, he's an obvious, I mean, he is built on raw power. This shows a 10% expected home run to fly ball ratio. He a 91 average exit velocity, younger. He's a big 6'6". He's still playing shortstop. He did in the AFL still. Probably is home, in my mind, is in an outfield spot, but he could play third base. There's question marks about that, but you know, what's built around O'Neill Cruz is that this guy has some of the best raw power, and your metric just kind of showed that off a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a similar theme with a lot of these players, with Cruz and with the next guy, Nico Horner. Just like guys that were underrated before accounting for their raw power metrics. And these guys tend to do better on prospect lists also. And it turns out rightfully so, because they do deserve more credit for, I mean, a 91 exit velocity in AA at 21, or was he 21 or 20 this year? He was 20. Yeah. So that's definitely eye catching and, pretty exciting.
The Nico Horner one's interesting though, because, you know, we just had a conversation about him. I think James is down on him. I'm not as down as James is, because, you know, something that Nico does similar, if you want to come back to maybe a Perdomo stance, is he makes just really good contact. And, you know, this shows about league average on exit velocity, maybe pending his age here, solid average fly ball distance. And he was a 9% home run to fly ball. So where you say, you know, O'Neill Cruz and Nico Horner are two so different prospects, where if corners the exact type of scenario where if you put more power on the type of player he is, the fantasy asset that he is way more valuable. I mean, I'd see him, he's a poor man's Carter Kieboom, but maybe with more stolen base potential. So like, how does this stuff work for you when ranking a guy like Nico Hoerner?
Yeah, so I ranked Hoerner before I wrote this article, and it was hard for me to get really excited about him. And partially that's because he hasn't been as good as he was hyped to be, like performance-wise, in a very small like sample of career plate appearances. So he's only had like 400 plate appearances across 2018 and 2019. But once you give him more credit for the power, which he like appears to deserve, his triple slash in AA before I adjusted it is 284, 344, 399, and it jumps to 298, 357, 462. And I think it's really important, especially with guys who don't have that large of a sample of plate appearances, who've only got drafted a year or two ago, that you really take their statistics with a grain of salt, which everyone says anyway, which everyone kind of knows anyway. I kind of need to remind myself more than I need to remind anyone else. But it becomes really all the more important to accurately capture their power if you're going to look at statistics in a smaller sample size. So I could definitely understand the hype on Hoerner now, more now, once giving him those, accounting for those extra home runs. And I mean, even in his major league sample, 80 plate appearances with the Cubs last year, he had like a 320 xWOBA, which is pretty solid. I mean, for a rookie, is already league average. And the plate discipline, as you already highlighted, is good. It's really good, and contact ability is really good. Now I'm more convinced after seeing these numbers that he actually has enough power to keep people honest, and definitely I would think he can approach 15 home runs in his peak, no problem.
And people probably, you know, if people haven't picked up on this in the past, you see some trends on. Obviously, I have a bias to players that, you know, that I'm able to, or a bias at least to my scouting of when I can see players, and I get to see a lot of these guys. Something I don't put on my public list that people can get on Patreon. I've got my top 500 prospects for fantasy. Something that's not on there, it's a tab for myself of prospects I've seen in person. I just color code and I go through, and it's like it's an immense amount of these prospects that I've seen in person. But you know, the whole idea behind, you know, this type of stuff of being able to put these numbers to players that have high contact ability, you'll see where I tend to go on the extremes of an ability. So high-end contact players, even if they don't show elite power, you might see me favor more. That's why I'm still in on Nico Hoerner. That's why I like Perdomo. But you'll also see me jump in on guys with extreme power potential. So I like Mason Martin more than most people, even though he showed relative poorish contact last year. But as a teenager or 20-year-old, he hit 35 homers in the minor league. So betting on extreme ability at the minor league level when they're still adjusting, I think is a decent way to go, even if there's some parts of it that don't look super appetizing. So that's where things can get wonky with a guy like Nico Hoerner. So I like that. So on the AAA front, I want to save the best for last here. These first two names are so fascinating, and I want to get your takes on it without skewing it. But Christian Pache, who, this is that guy that had not tapped into the big counting stats. I've questioned, even though I've gotten to see him a bit, and you know, he's a bigger bodied guy than you would expect, but he's never tapped into the big counting stats. He showed up here with one of the highest average flyball distances at 306. A 16% expected home run to fly ball ratio. And I think it might be important for you to elaborate on, you know, is that 16% as big as it feels, or is it weighted to the level? Like, you know, 16% is more just a little bit above average at AAA, or is it a true 16% expected home run to fly ball ratio jump for Pache, and is the power coming for him?
Yeah, so it is just a little bit above average for AAA. So if you scroll to the bottom of the article,
exactly,
it's around 15% is the average. But even that alone, just giving him league average power, which seems very like reasonable and modest. It really gives his overall stat line a big bump.
And what's important there too, and something I didn't mention, is this 16% expected, which would be above league average, is versus his 6% home run to fly ball, which looks extremely below league average. So it's I should have clarified that when I said it, so everyone fully understands. But now everybody's on board.
Yeah, for sure. So it looks like his power display in Double A, where he had a 196 ISO and 11 homers and 430 plate appearances, is more. I think I would pay more attention to that than his one homer in AAA in 100 plate appearances. And Apache, I like that you say their names first, so I can butcher their names less. I appreciate you doing that.
I still do it to this day. I know there are a couple, but that is the finicky nature for all of us in prospect stuff, where we see these names for years and we don't hear them and we create it. I still do it to this day, probably to an extent. I just get a little lucky being around some of them to clear it up. Apache is one I probably still butcher a little bit, but yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah, you're doing God's work there. I think he's really interesting because he's a guy that for years scouts have been saying he has really good raw power, but it hasn't been showing up in the stats. And I'm one that's more skeptical and like I want to see it in the stats. But examples like this make me reconsider and like realize that I need to be more balanced in my perspective because. I remember reading the minor league ball like community message boards, and they were hyping Pache for years. So it's really cool to see these underlying power metrics and incorporate them into his statistics. I think the one thing that's kind of frustrating about him, I guess this doesn't have to do with his power, is the speed doesn't really turn into steals for him so much. He only had 8 No. steals last year, which is kind of I feel like it's pretty rare that you see guys turning speed into steals later on in their careers. So that makes me temper enthusiasm a little bit.
Even more concerning, for 2 straight years, he's been caught more than he's actually stolen. So he's not on top of, like, the steal numbers aren't that high. He's also just not a great base runner. You know, he just doesn't equate to it. Now, this next one is somebody that I'm still in on. And I feel like the camp that is still in on Ke Bryan Hayes is low at this point. Because, you know, a couple factors. The average has always been, he's always been a good contact guy that hasn't clicked into the power. He's also a great athlete, a potential high plus end defender. He could be the third baseman for the Pirates right now. It's just he hasn't tapped into consistency. The average hasn't locked into the power, and he can go through some cold streaks, which is part of the minor league process. On this, he had a 9% home run to fly ball at AAA, but 17% expected and 92 average exit velocity, which is on the high end, and around 294 average fly ball distance. So I am still of a believer that it's going to click with Ke Bryan Hayes, and I think he can be a pretty important cog to the Pirates. So I'm not willing to dump off like many people are. So he shows up on this list, but I mean, what say you, Jordan?
So I think he's a good example of this overall process, because if you give him credit for his expected home run per fly ball rate, it's since he played like he had 500 plate appearances and he only hit 10 homers. But once you add in the additional expected home runs, it's a total of 19 homers last year. And he was a bit below average in AAA once you account for the if you look at his WRC plus, for example, just accounting for the crazy AAA context last year. If you don't read about him, if you don't watch video, it's hard to get a good idea of why people are excited about him. But then adding in these, adjusting for these expected power metrics, I remember me and Shelly Verstrate podcast together, and she was trying to convince me that Ke Bryan Hayes is worth paying attention to and that he's underrated. And she's been a fan of his for years.
Yeah.
And I should have listened to her. I should have listened to her at first. Cause clearly the 92 exit velocity for, in AAA is really impressive. And, it seems like he just had kind of a fluky, unlucky power year.
Yeah. I mean, he had, if you want to count to it, he had 43, even though it's a fluky power year, he had 43 extra base hits, 31 doubles, and 30 of those doubles where he only hit 10 homers at AAA. He had 30 doubles at that level, but also 13 stolen bases. So that's the other thing. When I talk about the athlete that he is, there's a real potential that this could be one of those guys that sneaks you in. I mean, I don't expect the power to crazily translate to the major league level. Even, you know, people could look at 113 games he played, he stole 13 bases, and they could just start to extrapolate and say, man, I might get 17 stolen bases. I don't know. I think you should live on the lower end, but this is a guy that's got 30 home run plus potential. He hits for a decent contact, and you can directly see, you know, from 2018 where his power numbers were low and he hit 293. This past year, strikeout numbers pop up a bit. Average comes down as he's trying to hit for more power. You can see the adjustment starting to happen. So if you got 30 homers, 10 stolen bases with a high-end average, you can absolutely live with that. Are you going to get it? God knows. That's this whole game is about. But the tools are real. You just have to hope that they click, and you are able to quantify some of those things are popping up, as you can see the expected power numbers, which is the biggest hang-up for most people, is where's the power going to come from Key Brian Hayes, and that kind of talks about it. And then the last guy, you talked about it maybe at the very, very beginning, probably, you know, your biggest point of being able to tweet about, you know, how interesting this is, and he's kind of the poster child of your article. It's Joe Adell, who had a obvious 0% home run to fly ball ratio in AAA last year, but an expected of 20%, like you said, a 311 average fly ball distance, 92 was his exit velocity. And people are a little torn right now in what type of an elite prospect that he is. And, you know, sometimes he's 2 on prospects list. I've seen him down to 5. People don't know where I don't think the speed is going to majorly translate after, you know, talking with him and being around him and seeing him and as his body grows. But I do believe the hit tool will be there. And I do believe he's going to hit for power in the middle of a lineup. But talk to me about what, you know, when you did this, you saw Joe Adell's numbers and probably your eyes perked up, got big.
Yeah, so Joe Adell was kind of a source of great consternation for me last year, because he in my prospect stats only offensive rankings, Adell didn't rate as highly as I thought he was going to, and that was the one thing that kind of kept me up nights. And I think mostly that was because of this. A lot of it was because of this AAA performance. And I actually recalculated his ranking once adjusting for the AAA performance and those two cruel rain delay home runs that were ripped from him, which is it's an underrated crime of 2019, I think. But once you add all those things in, his line looks very much as you would expect it to in AAA last year, 305, 357, 537. And yeah, I think he's a guy that he might not have the same sort of combination of like plate discipline and contact and power as well as like Wander or, even like Julio Rodriguez, who's another guy I'm super high on, but he does have a super fantasy friendly game. And like, he should have a ceiling as like an all-star player. And that becomes quite obvious once you take into account those really strong underlying power metrics.
So, I mean, it made you feel better, made you feel stronger about him being a high-end prospect is the biggest thing for you.
Yeah, and also it made me like feel better about my evaluation system. Like if I take into account these sort of power metrics, then I'll have less big misses. And I don't want to have that many big misses. So
I like that. Well, if you can figure a way to quell the misses for all of us in the prospect game, God bless you. You'll be doing the Lord's work here, the fantasy Lord's work here for all of that. But, you know, we all have it. For every one of my Nick Prados, I'll have a Julio Rodriguez or whatever that atones to. You know, this is a really, really great stuff. And you had sent me this whole table. Are there any other guys that, you know, you pick and choose the players you wanted to write about and you had really good stories about it. But was there anybody else in doing this work that popped out to you that you didn't get, you know, that wasn't article worthy or, you know, you just didn't get on there? I'm curious if you wanted to highlight.
Well, just looking at the guys who had the most home runs added by this process, and I'm kind of just scrolling through. I guess I was pretty. I wonder what your thoughts are on Jalen Davis on San Francisco, because he had some really crazy exit velocities last year and fly ball distances, and he was awesome in the minors after not being that good. He wasn't that amazing in Double A. Compared to how he was in AAA.
And also and, older. He's one of those guys. I mean, you know, he's 25 years old. He's going to be 26 this year. Those are always a little bit of a question mark. But, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. Like, his stats, they kind of jump out at you. But that's one of those things to me. This is where I have a hard part, and this is a deficiency for me, is when we get to where players have aged themselves out of appropriate levels and they've gone and repeated, I have a hard time really buying into kind of the, it's not even a post hype because they might not have ever had hype, but they've aged themselves out to a level where they start to dominate and then they put up some gaudy numbers. I mean, the dude had 35 homers in 2019, technically on three different levels, two of them being AAA with 10 stolen bases. Those are ridiculous numbers, but it was also a 25-year-old that was doing this. It's hard for me to fully buy in. But at the same time, you know, I haven't been attuned to, like, what were the changes that he made? Was he just dominating the level at his age? Or, you know, did he make, you know, Trey Harris had talked about it with the Braves. He had made some, you know, really, really key swing changes using high-end analytics. Is that something Jalen Davis has done? And also the Giants, as a team, philosophically, seem to have taken a complete 180 with how they approach their prospects over the last 2 years, something I can't get enough of with these dudes, these young minor leaguers that come in with high, you know, high OBPs and high contact rates. And all of a sudden at the same time, you see Jalen Davis make the change. So that's just me talking in a circle of saying, I have a hard time with some of these, like, you know, these post hype, you know, above their level or have gone beyond their level type of prospects.
Yeah. I like seeing you go back and forth and acknowledging, the potential underratedness, but also the potential like issues with him. But yeah, I think it would be easier to ignore his performance. But the exit velocity at 94 on average, I mean, if that in the majors, 94 exit velocity is like one of the top five dudes in the majors. I think that gives more confidence that maybe it's real. I mean, and with these guys, their cost is usually really cheap, so you can throw a bunch against the wall. If you throw Kevin Cron and Jalen Davis against the wall, probably one will stick. And it's always nice to have the next, like Max Muncy, Luke Voit, Nelson Cruz, like Quad A dude.
Great point.
So sometimes they do work out. And then another guy, I'm just looking through. So Carter Kieboom is another guy that does much better once you account for his expected power metrics. So his in AAA, he had 500 plate appearances. And his expected home runs per fly ball is 21% versus 16% actual. And that's five additional home runs. And his stat line looks much better. I'll have an article next week that's going to show stat lines for everyone. But Cruz is in the meantime, or Kieboom's in the meantime, is 315, 418, 541. Once you give him the credit for the extra home runs.
I love it.
Yeah, so it's good to see. It's good to see his line get better there too. It gets me more excited about him.
Hey man, you're doing fantastic work. You know, I don't ever want to call anybody like underrated or anything like that because everybody in their own right does great stuff. But you know, you definitely should be followed more. I hope you get a boost from this because you're doing some really, really solid work. And you can follow him, by the way, Jordan Rosenblum on Twitter at RosenJordanBloom. And you can catch all the great work over at Dynasty Guru. I know you also jump on the podcast. You go on the Dynasty Guru podcast as well, right?
Yeah. Dynasty's Child. I do that. I usually go like every other week.
See, that's perfect stuff. Perfect stuff. I hope you definitely lock in. I would love to have you back. I want to keep talking about this stuff because I like some of the work that you're doing that can kind of be baseline stuff to some of the things we talk about here. And, you know, hey, trying to find justifications across the board is important. And also, this was a perfectly apt time, I think, something that you put together when we're all kind of missing baseball. This is something for us to, I don't know, dive our head into. And I bet you have probably have this as a welcome distraction while you're missing and you can't get on MILB.TV, that you can put together some of this stuff for whenever we do have baseball.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think one of the goals I have for this extra time is just to try to turn some of these tools into like automatically updating leaderboards, so I don't have to spend like labor intensive hours updating them monthly next year or whatever. But yeah, it definitely has kept me busy. And I appreciate you having me on. It's definitely a privilege to be on, and I've followed you now for a while, so it's pretty exciting for me.
That's awesome stuff. Jordan Rosenblum, Dynasty Guru. Check him out. my friend. Thank you. So thank you for, what is it, late or early in Finland right now? I don't even know. What is it?
Yeah, we have quite the time distance between us. It's 7 o'clock in Finland now. And I know from, I've been trying to call my little brother for the past couple of days, and he lives in California. So I guess same time zone as you.
Yeah.
It's very hard to coordinate.
Yeah. So, you guys have like a window. You got like a 3-hour window where you guys can make it all work. Hopefully he doesn't sleep in late or anything like that. All right. Well, an American in Finland, like the Twitter bio says, Jordan Rosenblum. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
All right. There you go. Jordan Rosenblum. Very, very good stuff. Hopefully he gets a good bump. Hopefully you guys go and follow him. I really liked his work, and we were chatting offline too about some stuff. He may even try to, you know, give to some P1 listeners to implement. And I hope to do some more stuff with him very, very soon. Even though he's in Finland, I don't know how we're going to do a whole bunch of stuff. Very, very small window we can record, but he gets it. He gets the gist. I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. We'll have another one for you next week. I've got multiple things kind of in the hopper of what I'm going to do, but I do want to continuously tell you, if you got suggestions, hit me up. isitthewelsh@gmail.com. You can send me suggestions if you don't want to tweet them for any type of episode you'd like to see. I might do a mailbag episode, and I'll kind of put a cattle call out there for it if I do. I'm going to probably be doing, as you're listening to this episode, a chat on Patreon on Friday, just, you know, going through whatever you guys want to ask. I'll drop out here. And then remember, April 1st, it's going to be next week. I'm going to have a brand new update to the top 500 list, which I've been working on and going through. Some of the newest things that I'm going to add are not implemented yet, but there are new movement and there's new players and just, you know, reorganizing my thoughts. I'm also working on my dynasty list, which is on Patreon. It's a top 300. I went through a good pass, but I'm going through a even stronger pass with maybe a couple additions to the actual sheet that we'll see in April. So if that's your bag, awesome. If it's not, it's okay. Hopefully you're good. I hope you guys are all safe and you're okay in whatever manner okay is right now. It's really brutal to see. And I see some of my listeners, posting stuff just about like, you know, the stuff that they're going through, whether it's just absolute boredom or the people that are literally out there just like fighting this right now. So I hope everybody listening is in some type of good space, obviously thinking about you, and hopefully this was a needed distraction. That's always the biggest hope. Hopefully you got something out of it, but of course, you know, distractions are needed as necessary. All right, you guys have a fantastic weekend. I will talk to you next week. You know where to find everything that I got going on. Find me on Twitter @isitthewelsh, of course. And friendos, go wash those hands. We'll talk to you again on more Prospect One next week.
Peace.